You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to this podcast series on the emerging roles of oral SERDs in community care for HR-positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer. This is the first of a three-episode series hosted by Med Learning Group and designed to meet the educational needs of U.S.-based community oncology teams, including oncologists and advanced practice providers involved in the treatment of patients with metastatic breast cancer. My name is Erica Mayer. I'm the Director of Breast Cancer Clinical Research in the Breast Oncology Center at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, and I'm also an Associate Professor in Medicine at Harvard Medical School. I will be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about the evolution of endocrine therapy for HR-positive, HER2-negative metastatic disease. Joining me today is my dear colleague, Dr. Cynthia Ma, Professor of Medicine in the Division of Oncology at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. Cynthia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Erica. It's a pleasure being here.
Super. Let's get started. So, endocrine therapy, typically given in combination with a targeted partner, is an initial standard of care for the majority of our patients with HR-positive, HER2-negative advanced disease. However, as we know, there's definitely room for improvement. Can you speak to us a bit about the current standards of care and some of the most significant real-world challenges with the use of endocrine therapy?
So we know that in hormone receptor-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer, estrogen and estrogen receptor signaling really plays an important role in driving tumor cell growth. So therefore, endocrine therapy that either reducing the estrogen level or to target estrogen receptor have been very important therapeutic strategies for this subtype of breast cancer. So conventionally, we had aromatase inhibitors. These are agents that reduce estrogen production in postmenopausal women. And then in premenopausal women, of course, we have ovarian suppression. But we also have ER-targeting agents such as the SERM, selective estrogen receptor modulator tamoxifen, and the SERD, selective estrogen receptor degrader fulvestrant. Until recently, now we have oral SERD. But as we know that these agents are not all the time effective, so resistance is common, especially more recent, the recognition of ESR1 mutation that aromatase inhibitors would not be effective because mutations in ESR1 are in the ligand binding domain where estrogen usually binds to the estrogen receptor. And also tamoxifen and fulvestrant has less activity. So there are challenges how to overcome endocrine resistance. And we know that in recent years, the development of CDK4/6 inhibitors have really significantly improved the survival outcomes of our patients with hormone receptor positive HER2-negative breast cancer. And CDK4/6 inhibitors in combination with an aromatase inhibitor or fulvestrant has therefore become the standard of care first-line therapy. However, we know approximately 15% of the patients still will not benefit much from these agents, and they have intrinsically resistant tumors to CDK4/6 inhibitor. So that has been a major challenge. In addition, in patients who initially responded to CDK4/6 inhibitor, almost all would eventually progress. So that's a significant problem in the clinic.
Definitely. Thank you so much for reviewing that. And I completely agree that management of patients post CDK4/6 inhibitor is definitely an unmet need. Could you speak a little bit more about some of the patterns and mechanisms of endocrine resistance, in particular thinking about truncal mutations and clonal mutations and when these might arise?
After patients had disease progression on CDK4/6 inhibitors, the mechanism of resistance can be multifold. So for example, some patients may have estrogen receptor mutation, and this represents almost 40% of the patients who are on the first line CDK4/6 inhibitor plus aromatase inhibitors. And in that case, additional treatments with selective estrogen receptor degraders or in combination as monotherapy could be effective. In addition, a large percentage of patients with ER-positive breast cancer has mutations in the PI3 kinase pathway, including PIK3CA, as well as AKT, which is less common, or P10. So for these tumors, post CDK4/6 inhibitors, you could use alpha-selective PI3 kinase inhibitor or the AKT inhibitor or M2 inhibitors in these patients. So there are evolution of the tumor cells becoming more and more dependent on other pathways rather than hormonal ER pathways. So the PI3 kinase pathway as a major resistant mechanism, as we just talked about, but also other potential etiologies. And some patients may lose their dependence on ER or estrogen. Therefore, those patients may have a rapid progression on additional endocrine therapy approach in the second line setting. So these mechanisms are, you know, can be diverse and difficult to tease out sometimes.
Definitely. I think the more we study this, the more we appreciate the complexity. And, you know, thinking about the available agents, you know, we've reviewed the classic agents, aromatase inhibitors, and the sort of first generation SERD, fulvestrant. But it's very exciting to think about the next generation endocrine agents, which may be more effective at overcoming some of these mechanisms of resistance. Could you walk us through some of the key differentiators with the novel endocrine therapies versus our existing agents?
Of course. So we know the previously available fulvestrant was given intramuscularly and has issues with pharmacokinetics. So we are not able to reach the higher concentration needed a lot of times for targeting ER, especially in the situation of ESR1 mutation. So these next generation endocrine targeted agents really is trying to solve that problem. So these, for example, the oral SERDs, these are selective estrogen receptor degraders, but they're given orally and therefore able to achieve their efficacy dose. And has really shown to be better than the standard of care endocrine therapy, such as including the fulvestrant in especially the ESR1 mutant population. In addition to these selective estrogen receptor degraders, we have other agents such as the SERM, the selective estrogen receptor modulator, as well as PROTAC, the proteolysis targeting chimeras, as well as serum. So these are the complete estrogen receptor antagonists that antagonize both the AF1 and AF2 part of the estrogen receptor. And the CIRCA, that those are selective estrogen receptor covalent antagonists, which are irreversibly binding to the receptor and preventing its reactivation. So these are orally available and tend to have less side effects.
Yeah, it's such an interesting range of agents, and the mechanisms of action, while slightly different among the agents, are all really targeting that resistance in the estrogen receptor. Over the past few years, we've begun to see some really exciting data coming out with the oral SERD class of agents primarily, both as monotherapy and increasingly in combinations. I'd love to hear your perspectives of, you know, the new data and where things stand in development and what you're excited about.
We know that elacestrant and imlunestrant are the only available monotherapy for ESR1 mutant population at this time. So elacestrant was approved based on EMERALD trial, which was a phase 3 study that demonstrated that the median PFS would improve significantly, especially in the ESR1 mutated population, from 1.9 months to 3.8 months in a fairly heavily pretreated population. But in patients who had prior CDK4/6 inhibitor for, you know, was able to stay on that for at least 12 months, those patients, single agent elacestrant was able to achieve a median PFS over 8 months, which was quite amazing. And the benefit was seen regardless of mutations in the PI3 kinase pathway or other parameters. So imlunestrant was approved based on the phase 3 EMBER-3 study, so which compared imlunestrant with standard of care endocrine therapy after a patient progressed on their first line therapy, or if they recurred on or within 12 months of completing their adjuvant endocrine therapy. In addition, the third arm was added, which combined imlunestrant with abemaciclib. So the study demonstrated that immunoestrogen was superior than off-care endocrine therapy, though the median PFS was improved from 3.8 months to 5.5 months in the ESR1 mutant population with the immunoestrogen. Immunoestrogen's activity is limited to the ESR1 mutant population as well. In the combination study, when immunoestrogen was added to abemaciclib, there was a significant improvement in the PFS. So the, especially in the CDK4/6 inhibitor pretreated population, the median PFS was found to be 12.9 months compared to single agent immunoestrogen. So this was a pretty exciting finding as well, although we don't have the current approval for that combination yet, and the sample size was small, so future study may be needed. And then we know that we have several SERDs already produced fairly advanced data already. So for example, camizestrin. Camizestrin, we initially shown to be effective in a randomized phase 2 study, SERENA-2. It was compared to fulvestrin. So there were two doses of camizestrin, but both doses were found to be significantly associated with better progression-free survival. With that, the SERENA-6 was done. So this was the first study looking at can we target the ESR1 mutation that's emerging during AI plus CDK4/6 inhibitors even before radiographic progression, and can we prolong progression-free survival and patients' outcome. And in this trial, it had two steps. In the first step, patients on first-line AI plus CDK4/6 inhibitors were screened using the Guardant360 to check for ESR1 mutation every 2 to 3 months in associated with their imaging study. And then if they had an ESR1 mutation detected, patient would be randomized to camizestrin versus continuing on their AI. Both arms patient would be continuing on their original CDK4/6 inhibitors. I should say that the first step, the patient on AI plus CDK4/6 inhibitor, to be eligible for the trial, they have to have at least 6 months on the treatment and without progression. So in the randomized phase, which is step two, what they found was there was a significant improvement in median PFS after switching to camizestrin from 9.2 months in patients who continued on their original AI plus CDK4/6 inhibitor to 16.0 months. So 7 months difference in PFS. But I think most importantly also that the study showed a decrease or delay in time to progression or decrease delay in global health status deterioration to 21 months, while the AI plus CDK4/6 inhibitor arm was only 6.4 months. And we know at the ESMO that Eric actually presented additional details in the quality of life measures, showed significant decrease in worsening of patient symptoms such as pain, fatigue, and other symptoms, as well as functional domains. So these data really support early switching as a strategy in managing patients with first-line ER-positive breast cancer. And then giredestrin was also recently presented the data with Evera trial. So this was a second-line study in patients who progress on their first-line CDK4/6 inhibitors. So patients were randomized to the standard, which is endocrine therapy plus everolimus versus giredestrin plus everolimus. And this showed a significant improvement, almost 5 months, from 5.45 months with the standard of care versus 10 months in the giredestrin arm. So this is really exciting because the benefit was also seen with or without PI3 kinase pathway alterations.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you that, I'm really excited for all the new data with the oral SERDs. And in particular, this new combination data that's pushing the PFS post-CDK4/6 inhibitor to levels that we just haven't seen before. So it really is suggesting that combination may be the way. What about any of the other novel endocrine agents? We have seen some recent data with the PROTAC, vepdegestrin.
So VeriTAC 2 was presented at the recent ASCO meeting this year, and it's a second line in the second line setting post CDK4/6 inhibitor resistance, and there was a significant improvement from the use of fulvestrant versus vepdegestrant. So PFS improved from 2.1 months with fulvestrant to 5.0 months in the ESR1 mutant population. So the benefit appears to be restricted to the ESR1 mutant population, since in the non-mutant population, the difference was very small.
Yeah, I think it really makes us feel very grateful to be practicing breast medical oncology at this time when we have so many exciting emerging endocrine agents. And definitely it feels like a different landscape than it has for the previous decades when our choices were much more limited. Thank you so much for walking us through all of this exciting data and sharing your thoughts and perspectives. So that's all the time we have for today. I'd very much like to thank our guest, Dr. Cynthia Ma, for taking time to speak to us. And thanks to all of our listeners for joining us. Please join me for our next podcast. So Dr. Aditya Bardia is going to join me to discuss the importance of biomarkers and molecular testing for HR-positive, HER2-negative disease. And additionally, Dr. Kevin Kalinske will join me for podcast 3 to talk about monitoring and management of toxicities associated with oral endocrine therapy. Hopefully, you'll be able to tune in and also explore the many other types of CME programs that Med Learning Group offers. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to AstraZeneca Pharmaceuticals, who provided the unrestricted grant for this educational activity. Have a great day.